This is a thing now, huh?
Yeah.
It's a thing.
Thanks to David Jacliope. Welcome to the Most High Show. This episode is lit. We got Brian is in the building. Kale's on the ones and twos.
Yeah, yeah.
Leslie's doing quality control. We're going to be talking about self-love, the good kind, the healthy kind.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about surrender, the steps, God, therapy, a little bit of everything. This is what it's like to go out to pancakes with a bunch of alcoholics. So welcome to the Most High Show. Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show. My magnificent magnifying mind will turn what is as simple as me being selfish and self-centered and self-absorbed and not getting what I want and King Baby in this shit.
King Baby.
It'll turn it into, oh, this is a trauma response. Oh, this is an emotional wound that's not healed. What's the motivation? What am I getting out of this? All these like deep existential questions. And the answer to the question, there is no question. It's plain as day. I'm selfish. I'm self-centered. Mm-hmm. And I want what I want. I want it now.
Yeah.
And all of my problems boil down from that one thing, from that main thing.
Every time.
Yeah.
Every time.
I don't even think it's fear, to be honest with you, because I'm not that scared. I just want what I want.
Yeah. I think the first time I ever expressed a fear of not being surrendered enough, I was doing a fifth step, and I was on a bench with my sponsor, doing a fifth step.
Kale, I'm sorry, Brent. You got to adjust his shot. It's way too much headspace. Okay. He's tiny. Keep going though.
And I expressed that fear, and my sponsor was like, "You don't think you're surrendered enough." He's like, right now you're sitting on a park bench reading inventory to a goofy guy with a beard that you don't even really know all that well, and you don't think you're surrendered enough.
I'm like, yeah.
Okay, good point.
Yeah.
It's like, because I've done that before. I'm like, man, I didn't just walk into treatment just like, oh, I'm totally like, I'll do whatever, and I'm like, like all surrendered or whatever. But to me, it always boiled down to that control piece of like, I don't need that to surrender. Like, why do I feel like God can't provide that surrendered experience for me?
Yeah, you can cut to that camera while you're switching that, and then it won't be so dramatic for whoever's watching.
And, dude, he does. I mean, God, and God will provide whatever I need or however that looks like. I just trust that I am where I'm supposed to be. Once I put that problem in God's hands, it's like, here, dude, it's because it really is this control thing. I think I ever have a thought of, man, maybe I should just not do that, just tells me that there's a part of me that still thinks that I have any control. And then I'm like, nope, I don't.
Right. So, I get it. Like, part of it could be just that it's like this, if I just keep working on myself,
yeah,
right, and that there's something wrong with me, and I haven't surrendered yet. I haven't surrendered enough. I haven't surrendered. And then it's kind of like, okay, you need to be put in check. But also, there's also that there's a suspicion within me that knows that there's more freedom. There's a suspicion in me that goes, I know that there is a place where I don't have to be so wound up about things.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know there's a level to that.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm, maybe there ain't. I'm just,
But there could be. But like, why do I think that I know how to get there or what I need to get there?
Oh, that's it. You know? That's it. Yeah.
Because lately, dude,
that's when you jack it up.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, here's the genuine insight that says, oh, there's something deeper. And then here goes ego going, yeah, the other is. Let's go. I know how to get there.
Yeah. It's going to be in the most twisted way possible that only an addict can think of to actually get there. Like, what you just suggested is the most drug addict thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, I go need back and get high again.
I need to be more like the Buddha, so I'm going to go do some coke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Normal people don't think like that. It's fantastic.
How long did you have before you, in that, the relapse you had? I guess it was, what, your last one you had?
Yeah, yeah. So, it was like six months, and then I smoked some weed, because it didn't say that in the book. You know? And then 2 months later, I was drinking again. But I was drinking again because, back to what we were saying before, was because I wasn't doing anything to address all of that internal negativity, like the anger we were talking about, the resentment, the frustration, the fear, whatever it was. Like, I had nowhere to go with it, you know, and I wasn't at a place where I could pick up a phone and call somebody and tell them, like, I'm angry, you know, this person's pissing me off, you know, I'm frustrated at this, I'm upset with this.
Right, so you just kept denying it even was there.
Yep. And when you repress, I mean, it's got to express somehow. You can repress stuff all day long. And you can even repress stuff for a long time, but eventually it's going to get to the point where it's going to express itself. You can't keep things repressed forever.
Man, dude. Yeah. Yeah.
So eventually it did, in the form of me doing the one thing that I knew was going to kill me or land me back in treatment. And that's the powerless piece that I had to experience, you know, because I knew I needed help the first time I came in. Dude, I drank myself into a hospital with seizures and DTs and the whole bit. Like, I knew I needed help, and I never wanted to drink ever again, and I meant it. But I didn't understand what powerlessness meant. I hadn't experienced it until that moment, 8 months later, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Because, dude, and everything was like, hey, don't do this, and there's nothing I could do.
Well, and too, like, maybe it's too, like, that it's... I just try to, like, get away from linear language on this stuff, right? Because I don't think it's accurate. But because I want to say that there's levels, right? But it's almost like cyclical. So it's almost like there's like each time around the proverbial sun, I go, oh, I can feel there's some more. Here's some more surrender, you know, or here's some more admission of powerless, right? Because I think that when I first got sober, it was like easy, bro. It was not that hard.
Yeah.
It was, it's not like it wasn't that hard. It was like, it was clear to me that this was the path that I'm going down.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had to leave my job and I had to drive myself to treatment. Right. So there was a lot of surrendering I was doing. I was letting go of a big part of who I thought I was. Right. And trusting people and doing this whole thing.
Right.
You know, and it's almost like there was a level of powerlessness that I just had enough.
Yes.
To get me off cocaine.
Yep.
You know, and now what I'm looking for is like, I'm looking for, okay, now what's that next level of it, right?
So here's the unfortunate thing about that, is we have to experience that.
You can't, yeah.
You know, it's like, I wish I could create a surrendered experience, but I haven't figured out how to do that yet. And so that has to happen to me. And that, dude, and it happens. And God, that's the part where, like, people in recovery and just people in life will struggle about the spiritual journey a lot, is that that doesn't look pleasant. It doesn't feel pleasant. It isn't pleasant. It usually comes with a whole hell of a lot of discomfort. You know what I mean? When you have that surrendered experience, and God can do that in many different ways for me.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to live through this.
Yes.
Yeah, man. Who wants to do that? It's like, you know, just want to get it on Sunday. You know
right.
what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, man. It's really interesting. You know,
well, here's the other interesting piece that you mentioned there is that I've talked about this with my sponsor a lot. It's like when we look at the people who've got the long-term sobriety, long-term recovery, is usually people who have said that they didn't struggle with obsession for a while, right? Like people who actually, like, God removed the obsession actually, like, immediately. Like, you having that 1, 2, 3 experience, you know, like you really had that experience and God takes away that obsession.
Yeah.
It's like, and that happens immediate because that happened for me.
Yeah.
It wasn't like I didn't have to work the steps to have that obsession removed. God did that. It's like God, the steps remove all the things that get me all the things that block me from my intuition, from my spirit, which keep me in a position of grace. You know, but God provides that grace initially. Mm. And it sounded like when you shared your experience that that was a similar experience that you had. Mm-hmm. And it makes perfect sense to me that you've established long-term sobriety. It's interesting to me. It's fascinating.
Yeah. Well, we had a debate on national TV about this. Me and David, who just came into the room. And, you know, about how now when I look back on my story, I realize, like, shit, I really had nothing to do with it.
Yes.
You know, like, yeah. Like everything was put in place because I was such a performance, and still am in some ways, a performance addict, right? I want to do good. If I do a good job, it means I am good,
yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
So, and I also had and still have this to this day, that what makes me a good man is that I provide for my family.
Yep.
I'm a provider. So here I am with my back against the wall, knowing that I can't continue to use and drink the way that I've been and continue to also be this other side of me, this performance guy and this provider guy. I can't be both. And so I chose provider performance guy, right? But even then, the only reason why I was able to get the time to heal was because the company, God's grace, you know, they said, hey, we're gonna keep your job open. We're going to pay your salary. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to give you that time. You know, take the time. We got you, dog. If they would not have said that, there was no way I was going to go to treatment.
Yeah.
The only way I would have went to treatment is if I really crashed and burned and got arrested or something at that point. There was no way I would have accepted. So that, even that, right? The fact that I had that path so paved out for me, yeah. It was obvious I had to go down that path.
Yeah.
It's all God's grace.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And maybe I've been coasting on God's grace a little too long. You know what I'm saying? Dave, you want to adjust your mic? It looks like you got a limp. You got a limp mic over there.
Well, you know, I'm 50. What's up, Brian? How you doing,
Dave?
Dude?
It's good to see you, man.
Good
how
to
you
see
been,
you, brother? Yeah.
Been all right.
It's always a pleasure to see you, man.
Likewise.
I'm sorry. It just happened, and we started talking.
No,
so
it's
I was
my
like,
fault.
Let's dude. Roll.
I wish
let's
I was roll. Here earlier. I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. We were just talking about how I was saying that. There's like the level of surrender, you know, and feeling like there is more to be had. God, it sounds like even it's like spiritual
give me
addiction.
More surrender. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I need surrender. In fact, more surrender.
Yeah. But kind of like this knowing inside that's like there's a deeper peace, there's a deeper knowing that's there, that's achievable. Yeah. And what do we do with that? You know,
that takes a lot of convincing, I think.
Oh, really?
I think so. I mean, this the process of surrendering, like the idea, like what is that? Mm. You know what I'm saying? Like, how do you get surrender to what, to who, how, what's going to happen? What does that mean? And I think the process of understanding it and getting through it is when that depth. Oh, there's something to this. Oh, this is the reason. This is why I have to, this is the fruits of this, mm-hmm. You know, and I agree with you. I don't know where our debate took us. I don't even know what we were talking about, but, you know, I do remember you saying, you know, that this is all, you know, the things that are happening to me has been mapped out before me. And God put these things that were probably horrific and scary and tough and difficult at the time. It was part of my journey that got me to, you know, to where the choices of, you know, being the provider, I choose the provider.
Yeah.
Compared to this life.
Yeah.
You know, God made that happen for me. You know, yeah. I agree with that. I don't know if I was disagreeing with that before and during our debate.
Yeah. We were forced into two corners of the conversation.
He put me in the bad corner.
For the
that.
Sake of a show.
I look like Mr. Corporate America and that whole. Yeah. Yeah. I was like, this ain't even me, man. How did I get here? But yeah.
I haven't gotten a chance, but I know Kirk listened to the whole thing because he was driving and he was like, oh, I'll tell you about that later. So but I haven't got to, but I'm really interested to hear what he had to say about I'm pretty sure he'd be on Team Dave. Yeah. Yeah.
But the topic is
what? Oh, lower.
is the topic? Are we talking about what are we talking about? Self love.
Self love.
Yeah. Okay.
We hadn't even gotten there. We were just,
rapping, we were just talking. Rapping about.
Yeah,
we just, okay.
Yeah.
We just
yeah.
So I'm trying to find out how it ties in and all that.
Yeah. Because I was saying that, you know, this is not any. That's like not a. I get confused with self love. You know what I mean? Like I don't know how to do that in a healthy way. You know,
wow.
Like you see a lot of art in this room now. That's probably like something that I've just like not recently, maybe the last couple of years, really started getting into.
But you are coming up, bro.
Yeah,
I'm gonna tell you right
there. Last two pieces.
That thing right there.
Yeah,
That's fly.
But that's becoming self-love.
Yeah,
that's loving myself because I'm taking this time to explore this creative thing, and art for me has always, you know, until I really got sober. Art was always like a means to an end. Mm. So when I was making music, I wanted it to be on the radio or heard or, you know, and then now what art and expression has become is become self-love. It's been just me chilling with Jesus, kicking it and just, you know.
It's like expression of your spirit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So here, I'm going to put you in a spot real quick.
Okay.
I like to do this. What are two things, just real quick, two things that you love about David?
Two things I love about David. Oh, man.
Play along, man.
I love he's always a cheerleader.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else would I say? It's serious.
That's a good question.
Yeah. And I want to say the other thing is, like, it's either honesty or, he's honest.
Yeah. What's two things you love about yourself?
Oh, two things I love about myself?
Yeah.
Damn, dude. That's a good one. What do I love about myself? I'm really good at sex.
All right, fair.
And
talk about it.
I'm a creative force.
Yeah. Creative force. Okay.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's fascinating to me. Cause I'll run groups with clients and there's always two or three clients in the group that they have no idea what they love about themselves. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating to me.
That's why they're sitting down there in the first place, man.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
And why I think it's such an interesting topic because it's like that same person can share whatever they mm-hmm. love about other people, no problem. But like, why is it so weird to say that about yourself? And I struggled with it for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what do I love about myself? I don't know. You know.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know. It's like, it feels weird. It's almost like we're taught to say, "Well, no, you're not allowed to love yourself." Right?
Yeah.
That's narcissistic.
We picked that up somewhere.
Well, there's somewhere. A fine. I think there is a fine line.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, like, to be transparent about it, I think. When you follow a spiritual life that has everything to do with helping and serving
mm-hmm.
and, you know, it's almost like it's not about you, even in addiction, a person that's, struggling with, alcohol and narcotics and using and stuff like that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
The ultimate answer is make it not about you, dude. The whole thing. It's like, get off your selfish freaking totem pole and take somebody else into consideration for once in your life, right?
Yeah,
so it kind of, and then in the talks, when you get into like spirituality and, right here? Oh.
Oh, he's telling him, bro. Don't pull it down. Push it out. Like push it towards the armrest. Yeah. See how that works?
We good?
Cool. Good.
Yeah.
We're teaching Brian mic control.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
I mean, and what it turns into is we get so much talk about ego, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And your pride and all these things, all these negative things that would like, you know, we use to boost ourselves, right? And that kind of like translate into the opposite of loving yourself. You know, I think I read somewhere where self-love can be defined as like an ethical egoism.
Mm.
you know.
Ethical egoism?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so it's difficult to... it's difficult to wrap your head around that, especially in those two things, to find a thread to loving yourself.
Let me read this thing from, this is Jack Kornfield. He wrote this book called After Ecstasy, The Laundry. Okay, it's a book I've been reading. I'm almost done with this. Fantastic book. And it's about like real, like what do you do after enlightenment? Like what's real enlightenment? And it's fascinating. So he says, he tells this story. In 1989, at one of the first international Buddhist teacher meetings, we Western teachers brought up the enormous problem of unworthiness and self-centered self-criticism, shame, and self-hatred, and how frequently they arose in Western student practices. The Dalai Lama and other Asian teachers were shocked. They could not quite comprehend the word self-hatred. It took the Dalai Lama 10 minutes of conferring with another monk, his translator, to even understand it. Mm-hmm. Then he turned and asked how many of us experience this problem in ourselves and our students, and he saw us all nod affirmatively. He seemed genuinely surprised. "But that's a mistake," he said. "Every being is precious. Nevertheless, self-judgment and shame are there in the many of those who come to Buddhist practice."
Interesting.
See, that's how foreign,
yeah,
that is.
But like, yeah, the self-criticism piece and the self-hatred piece to them. Mm-hmm. Because that, to me, is the thing where the ego actually comes in. Like, that's the false pride, mm-hmm, right? That's the ego. It's like, who am I actually to say that I'm a piece of crap, or I suck, or I'm not worthy, or
okay,
I'm not good enough?
Yeah.
Who, like, in the eyes of the universe, I mean, it's a pretty intelligent energy, right? So it creates everything intelligently, and so everything's got a purpose.
Yeah.
And so everything is basically equal. So who am I to say, you know, better or worse? Mm-hmm. So it's almost like when we talk about self-love, we almost have to define what love like really looks like. Grace, compassion, forgiveness, mm-hmm, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Holding space for, you know, just understanding that you're worthy without saying that I'm up here.
Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is long-suffering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing. Because when you ask an addict early in recovery, he's got 7 days or something like that, what do you love about yourself? And they can't see anything.
Yeah.
Because all they can see is all this negative shit that they've done for like years and years and years.
And everybody's going, yeah, you got a week, man. You got a week. Congratulations.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're,
yeah,
like, all right.
I haven't accomplished shit, you know?
Right. Yeah.
You know? And then you learn later on down the road that you didn't even accomplish those 7 days. There was a power greater than you that did it anyway.
Wow.
But that's all that they can see. And a lot of times what happens is that's all they can continue to see. And they get stuck in that negative, you know. If I'm walking around thinking I'm an unworthy piece of garbage all the time, there's one thing an addict's going to do with that: kill that pain, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, how can we get people to like shift that? To me, it's the self love. To me, is like a humility of accepting everything that I am as a being. And I think that's why Buddhist practices separate themselves so much from the idea of self hatred or self criticism, because they observe rather than judge.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. That's where I was going to get to, which is that, hold on, this freaking thing is vibrating. I don't know what the hell's going on. That's what I was going to get to, is that judgment mind.
Yeah.
Right? Is that and I think that it's a result of a lot of different things. I think there's cultural and societal impact, and it's this like cycle of like judgment. You know, and I think when we get stuck into this, where we're judging everything we do, and we're taking everything and we're sorting it and going, that's bad. Well, that was good. Well, that was good. That was bad. What do I do with this one? I don't know what to do. Well, that's probably bad. You know, like, and so we're never able to just see things as they are, just see it without going, that was good or bad, you know?
Yeah, having a judgment on it.
Yeah.
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 And I think a lot of that, one of my favorite talks is from a guy he talks about emotional sobriety, and he talks about why a lot of times people will deny their feelings and their emotions. It's like, if I'm sad, you know, and you come up to me and say, "Brian, you look sad. Why are you sad?" I ain't sad. It's like, well, men aren't supposed to cry, mm-hmm. right? So we deny the feelings that we have. And a lot of people think that, well, it's because I don't want to be vulnerable and I don't want to mm-hmm. let people in and stuff like that. But the reality is that that sadness or the fear or the anger or whatever it is that we're denying does not fit this perfectionist ideal that I have set for myself.
Right. I'm good. I'm good. I'm all
right. Right.
I'm all
right. And what you said, it's that you've set for yourself.
For yourself, right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nobody told you mm-hmm. you had to do this in this certain way.
Right.
But you told yourself.
Man.
Yeah.
So the inevitable result of a perfectionist, unreachable ideal that you've set for yourself is that you're not going to reach it. And then when you don't reach it, it's self-loathing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of this loop that we get. Like for me, that's something that I've struggled with in my life. It's like creating this absurd expectation that I'm supposed to be anything other than exactly what I am.
Right.
And then when I don't reach that absurd expectation, then I dive into that. I guess I'm just a piece of crap. Or I'm unworthy.
Yeah.
Or I don't deserve to be loved or whatever it is, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's that binary judgment mind. I think that is, you know, it's just like 2 weeks ago I went to Florida on like a sabbatical solo trip, which was amazing, by the way.
Like, I saw the pictures.
What the hell do I do with myself? Yeah.
That's a long time by yourself.
Fantastic. Well, it wasn't a full week. It was, you know, it was like, you know, it was a lot of days driving. Next time if I do it, I won't go as far. But anyway, I'm like going to the ocean. I'm talking to a friend of mine, sponsor, and this lady's got like 30-something years, right? And we're talking, and I'm like, it's so funny because I'm coming to the ocean to connect with God. Like, God isn't in my freaking living room. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I have to go to this.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I, but there's something about the ocean too, though, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know?
I need to get there.
Oh, man, I love it.
No ocean time this year, yeah.
Oof, yeah.
Yeah. So we create these structures and these frameworks, yeah. right? And I think that's what, to your point earlier about the steps, what the steps are doing is, I mean, I think trying to, and pretty successfully, that is deconstructing a lot of that stuff.
Yes.
Because all that stuff is the stuff that... will, if unmaintained, unregulated, what's that daily reprieve, you know, on the maintenance of, you know, unmaintained.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it will lead us back to a super destructive and dysfunctional life.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So so what we're saying is it's kind of like there's this tension between a striving for a better version of us, mm-hmm. but also at the same time, fully accepting who we are in this moment.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's tough, man. I mean, you know.
Yeah. If you have 7 days sober and you're just tuning in, I'm sorry.
But. Well, I think, you know, again, it's really hard and I think a lot of it is cultural. I think that we're kind of taught, even in the way religion is interpreted, Christianity is interpreted in this culture, we're just not worthy.
Yeah.
Right.
You were such a low piece of crap.
You were born
that I sent
that
my
way.
Son down to die for you.
Yeah.
That's how much I believe in you, but you're just not worthy of it because you don't have no self-worth. You're not good enough. You know, that's how it interprets to me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's how it has interpreted to me for a long time of my life.
Yeah, dude.
And then, you know, you add the guilt of your life, you know, especially if you made a lot of mistakes and you've been in that gutter. I mean, building yourself up to love yourself is getting a clear view of God's love for you.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Why do you love me so much?
Yeah.
Why is he doing, why did he do these things for you?
Yeah.
For me? Oh, because somewhere in this whole thing, I'm worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that's where you start believing in yourself, you know, having that spiritual connection. And, you know, it's so funny that, you know, right before I came here, we were talking about in my group, we were talking about self-compassion. I don't know how that, it was really weird that it went down. I knew that we were going to talk about this, but I didn't think about it until we got here.
But now compassion.
That's in love.
That's different though, right?
I think it's a part of it.
You think it's a part of it?
Yeah. Because
I like compassion though as a word because I feel like it's specific and I feel like it's not as diluted as love.
Well, yeah, love can be... That's why
compassion,
that's why you
got
to get to
that.
Chapter 13 to get the understanding of love.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Because, you know, when we were talking about it before and wanting to be able to define what that actually looked like and not in this, like, self-aggrandizing way, but in just in a way of, like, acceptance and forgiveness of self and compassion and grace, like, that kind of a love, right, is that the more that you accept and have compassion and grace and love and forgiveness for yourself, like, the more you're able to show up in the world in that way. So, like, the idea being, like, the more love that I have for myself, the more I'm able to actually bring that vibration and energy into everything that I do, the more love I'm able to give. Because I can't give you what I don't have. If I don't have love in here, how can I genuinely give you
Yeah, if you don't love yourself, how can you love somebody else?
Exactly.
You know, and once somebody told me, if you're not taking care of yourself, what good are you to anybody else?
Right.
Yeah. If you ain't good, what good are you going to give to be to anybody else?
Yeah.
That meant something to me.
It's like self-care isn't for you.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's like, you know, I always say, like, service work to me is very selfish because
it is.
The therapeutic value I give are what it makes me feel. It makes me feel good about myself, that I participated, that these people accepted me in here, that I was able to be a part of this. I mean, it's like that gives me love for me. Through service. And that's the understanding that I have now. But there's always, you know, I think specifically for men, there's always that fine line of like your ego and your pride and like you're not supposed to. Like, God, love myself.
Yeah.
You know, there's always that.
Yeah.
You know?
Love I think yourself. That's like where.
Just work overtime.
Yeah.
Love that check and love being able to feed your kids. That's what you need to love.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So we'll take, because we don't know how to live in the tension of things. So we take this thing of, you know, some of the men that I respect the most are providers, right? You know, they're guys that give opportunities. And there's guys that take opportunities, right? And the men that I like have admiration for are the ones that provide opportunities, right? Because there's something about them, right? And so knowing that, but then also not getting caught up in that, you know what I mean? Like, so we have to live in the tension of this stuff. And another thing I want to say about that golden rule about how we love, I love your neighbor as you love yourself, right?
Yeah.
And I think that we have read that and thought of that as a prescription, right? But I think what it is a description. It says that I will love my neighbor as I love myself. So if I love myself like shit, I'm going to love my neighbor like shit, right? And if I love myself well, I'm going to love my neighbor well.
Amen.
It's also like sometimes I might got to see myself love my neighbor well to start loving myself well.
Yeah.
Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's hard. It's hard to be in that tension of those dichotomies.
Yeah, but it's all because the tension brings a back and forth. You got to get yourself back over here. You pull, you know, your actions and like how it feels you. You know, your intention could be, you know, I want to be confident in myself. I want a good self esteem. You know what I mean? I want to believe in myself. You know what I mean? And then, you know, that could easily turn into a couple pats on the back, and all of a sudden,
yeah,
that's right, guys.
Yeah.
Hold on, let's talk about it a little bit. This is what I did.
Yeah,
let me tell you how I did this. Okay? And then your ego starts to easily take over, man, and you don't really necessarily want that, but you just that feeding of affirmation is a difficult, at least for my generation, I think it is. I work with a lot of teens, man, and like the way they give each other affirmation so sincerely and so real to boost each other up, it just amazes me.
Yeah.
When somebody get like, if I, you know, tell David what you love about him, right?
Yeah.
I'm automatically uncomfortable.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They're not.
Yep.
Teens today are they're ready to receive it and thank you for it. It's weird for at least my generation, I think. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing to get love, much less love yourself and get that self love, you know.
Well, aren't those two things can be tied into each other too, right? It's like if I don't really hold any kind of space of like actual love and acceptance for myself, when you tell me that you love me, I'm like,
y'all don't believe it.
Exactly. Because all I can see are these things that I don't like about myself. So yeah. That's the truth that I'm looking at. So I have to like see, I have to constantly get myself out of my perspective and like, what is the universe telling me, right?
That's a big time struggle for some people. I just recently was telling a guy, and these were the facts of his life. I was like, dude, I never hear a bad word about you. You're always involved. You're always helping. And you're always like just a part of good things. And you've always been like, you know, a good friend, you know. And these are the facts of your life. But if I was to ask you what you think of yourself, it would be really bad.
Right.
And then whenever you fight these realities, you tell me, you know, that's how I was raised. And I get that. Like, I get the powerful impact of that kind of what that kind of influence can, like, really lay upon you. I'm a part of that, right? So, but it's like, no, but listen. These are the realities. These are factual things. You do these things, right? Do you do these things for real? Are you faking it when you do it? No, you feel good when you do it. Even your health and wellness, he's a very in-shape dude. Like, dude, you take care of yourself. Like, you're doing all these things. Like, why? Don't you, you know, it's like you are not in reality, really. Mm. If you hate yourself through that and you think lowly of yourself through these facts, then you are, your battle is with reality.
You're in delusion.
Know? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a really tough place to be, man. And I know that they sincerely feel low of themselves, you know.
Yeah. And I think, I wonder if some of that perspective is because it's like, I'm with me all the time. It's almost like if you were to say that about me, or you were to say, I would even think, well, yeah, but I mean, that's like your perspective, and yeah. You only get a certain amount of time with me. Like, that's all you're seeing.
That's one of the excuses that they probably
exactly.
Tell you. Oh, he doesn't know me really.
Yeah, because if you really knew me, then you probably wouldn't love me.
But see, this is what Christianity's trying to get at, right? Because Apostle Paul writes in one of his letters, I think it's in Romans, he says that while we were sinners, God died for us.
Amen.
Right? Christ died for us. Which to me is a statement to saying that, like, that's what love is, right? It's regardless of, it's in spite of, it's in addition to all that darkness, all those bad things, that love is encompassing all of it, right? Like, love covers a multitude of sin. Like, like all these are Christian concepts, right? That it's hard to quote without, you know, feeling like I'm offending someone, but like, how can I offend someone with love covers a multitude?
Love covers a multitude.
Somehow
many?
Someone's feelings
how many
are,
sins?
Yes, right. But it's like, because this has been a thing that I think in this last year has really been put in my radar, which is integration, right? Which is, because so much of my recovery and spiritual growth has been about denying the negative, or the negative is mine to deal with, and the positive is God in me.
Wow.
Yep. Right?
Yeah, that's right.
And it was the seventh step that really turned it around for me.
Yeah. Yep.
And that seventh step prayer, which is, God, I'm ready for you to have all of me, the good and the bad.
Every piece of me, the good and the bad.
Yeah. And it's, you know, from working with a sponsor that I have who has really kind of pointed that out. It's the, you know, God loves, he wants all of you.
Right.
All of you.
Wow. Yeah. And then the next part of that prayer is, please remove from me everything that stands in the way of my usefulness to you. So it's even suggesting that I've got some things that I think are negative or defective that God can actually use and will actually
come
use.
On.
Yeah. So I always found it very interesting, the Alan Watts definition of what a holy person is. So, like, we often think of a holy person being like a saint or a priest or a pastor or something like that. But the holy person, to what Alan Watts' point, is to say the person who is just whole, a person who has looked at every single part of themselves and has accepted every single thing about what they are.
This is me.
This is exactly what I am, and all of that, to your point. And that is a holy person, whole, right?
Yeah.
And he said, even gave the story about, you know, since you were talking about going to the ocean to meet God. But sometimes we do need to kind of get away from the noise to get in touch with intuition. Yeah. And Jesus would even go into the desert or into the forest to pray for that same reason. And there was a time when he actually went in there and, you know, as the story goes, tempted by Satan. But according to some people, the interpretation of that was actually that what he was doing was he was meditating on all the evil that existed in the world. He was meditating on all the evil that existed in the world, and he realized that he was equally as capable of it as anybody else. And so he became a holy person because he understood
that's that heavy.
He wasn't up here, right?
It's a heavy.
That's real. Yeah.
It's a heavy perspective right there.
And once you can understand that, if you can get to that place of true humility about that, then you can actually become aware of it and make a different choice. And access the spirit and the power within.
That's really where I'm at in growth right now, is in that exact spot, which is it acknowledging that these things are in me. Because so much of my growth, would it be maybe from religious dogma that I've absorbed or just old wiring, but it's like I've denied these parts of myself, right? The shadow part of myself. And so by denying it, I've never addressed it. But it's been there. And it's been causing havoc and it's been doing stuff. And so it's to look at this shadow of me and going, okay, the shadow of me is still me.
Your shadow self.
My shadow self. It's still like, it ain't there if there ain't no light, you know? It ain't there if I'm not there. Right, so this shadow is a part of me, and how do I embrace that and integrate that into my life, and apply this concept of self-love, that self-love can love all of me, all of me.
Love that's my jam right there.
All of you.
I mean, like, you know, for me, like and this is just recently too. Like, I've been like purposeful in the music that I'm listening to because. I feel like, not that I have any issues with the music that I was listening to before, but it's like I'm purposely listening to like more like self worth type of music.
So you turned off any of that fool.
I mean, I think I even shared one with you and Wes, the last one that I'm just trying to like, there's a part of me that's like really trying to convince myself that I am worthy.
Yeah.
That this is a part of me like trying to convince myself because, you know, like from the life that I've lived to now and the things that are happening, like, you know, sometimes I sit in these places and I'm in positions, I'm in these situations where, you know, I'm like, I know that I'm suffering from imposter syndrome. Mm. It's like, did I fool everybody to get here? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I'm saying? How am I in this push? Like, who am I manipulating? Who am I lying to? Mm-hmm. Who, you know, how did I do it? You know what I'm saying? And like, those are like the questions I ask myself that like really mess with my head. You know what I mean? And I have to be like, you know, just like I told the person about his life, I was like, I got to self-talk that to me, bro. You put it in. You put in freaking work. You know what I'm saying? You deserve to be there. You're really trying. You're doing the extra efforts. Like, those are hard things for me to, like, accept about myself and to where, like, I have to recently, I've been constantly, like, convincing myself. And it's like, I'm putting music on that supports that, you know, that kind of vibe. And it's been helpful because...
Are you listening to Positive Affirmations by Jeff Vickers?
No, the jam that I got on, I hope you listen. It's called Mirror. I always say
that's the name of the song.
Yeah, it's dope, and it's about like talking about, you know, you didn't think, you know, that you should be here. You know, you don't understand about like how special you are, about the things that you're doing. Like you know, it's like basically affirming what I'm trying to convince myself of. You know,
but how do you do that though without building, just reconstructing? You use the term, which is my ego reconstructs itself, right?
Oh, yeah.
I love that metaphor, that visual in my mind. So how do you do that and acknowledge that, yeah, you do belong, but you also, you know, you're also like a product of grace that you're even there to be able to do it.
You yeah, because I mean? Like, because I always say, if anything good happens to me, it's like, nah, man, that was, it was a higher power thing, baby. I ain't had nothing to do with it.
But if you did something wrong.
But if you look at the train wreck across the street, that was all me.
Right.
Every single piece of it, yeah. I orchestrated that whole thing, you know. And I just want to, like, you know, it kind of leaves me where I feel like my actions are kind of not real. Like, if you know, I know, like, that God has put me in this place where I am right now. And I know he had me go through the tough stuff. I think that's kind of like what you guys were talking about at the beginning. God walked me through, like, these really hard times in my life. And he walked me through, like, you know, all the obstacles that I've had to face, you know. And if anything good does happen, and if I'm doing anybody any service, and I'm providing and I'm doing those things for my family, I give it to God. But, like, I, you know, self-love to me is, like, I don't know if it's, like, giving credit to me, but, like, understanding that I am doing the things that are necessary to be who I am today.
Chop wood, carry water.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, like, that I can do.
Yeah.
And that I can. So, and that's always, for me, anytime I would run that group and I would ask the clients what they loved about themselves, if they ever brought it back to me, the one thing I always say is, I'm willing. Mm-hmm. I'm willing. Because it covers everything, basically. But it means that I have no idea what the heck I am doing or what I actually am. I don't know what God's plan or purpose is with me. I'm doing the best that I can with it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have defects. I'm going to have gifts. I'm just willing. Like, I'm trying to do the right thing. I'm trying to do what God's will is. I fall all the time. I beat myself up when I fall. I still do that. I still struggle with that. But I'm willing, right? So I'm just willing. I'm going to show up today. Because before, I kind of felt like I wasn't willing to really face myself or really face life or really accept these things about myself when I was out there drinking and drugging. You know, mm-hmm. I was always, you know, we say we were running from something or escaping or whatever. I always thought it was from life or from other people or from society, but really it was always from me. And I think the best thing that recovery has done for me is to, you know, provide the willingness to face everything that I am and everything in this life. But I think that's where, to me, that's where I've always said that I feel like the addiction and the alcoholism is actually a gift from mm-hmm. God, right? Yeah. Like, that was the thing that God was going to say, I kind of need you to see where you are powerless so that my power can come in, right? Like, my strength is made perfect in your weakness, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's weird, because I know that if I didn't do the crappy stuff that I did in my life, right, and was put in the position where I had to, like, have consequences behind that, and other people had to, like, have consequences due to my actions, due to my poor choices and stuff like that, I don't think I would have the perspective of life. If I would have just cruised through life different, you know, no drugs, no alcohol, I don't think I would have had, like, I feel like I have a depth of sympathy, understanding, what it means to, like, give, you know what I mean? And those things are all very important to me. I don't think I would have had that if I would have just, you know, made it through high school, you know, got a good job, worked full time and had a family. I don't think the depth of, like, service and understanding and generosity and giving and friendship and all those things would have had the level of those things would not have been as deeply in my life if I didn't go through and my relationship with God. I probably could have made it to church on Easter and Christmas and stuff like that and told you I was a Baptist or something like that. But it wasn't until I went through my journey in addiction into recovery where I know, like, God is real. He is with me. He walks with me. And, like, he is blessing me continuously.
And then you're... Your dark past ends up becoming, you know, all that stuff ends up becoming the thing that is particularly useful about you.
Absolutely.
It becomes your purpose.
So then that's, I think, where it gets to, you know, this being a high bottom drunk, you know, is what I heard someone say recently, right?
What does that mean? I never heard that.
A high bottom drunk is like I didn't, like I would consider that me, right? I didn't get arrested. I didn't do prison time. I didn't lose my job. I didn't lose my kids. Yeah, I didn't lose the house, you know? Part of that, and that's part of the problem because of that. I mean, it's a gift, right? But there's almost like this consistent, like, nagging of, you know, I should, you know what I'm saying? Because I didn't lose. And I would, you know what I mean? I got out of treatment with this foundation and this ability to build. And so I am obligated to build. I'm obligated to give back. I'm obligated to do all this stuff because it could have been worse and it wasn't. Is that track? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, it's like a survivor's guilt, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it's like.
I didn't suffer enough.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I should have. And I think that might be what carries that self-hatred on, right? Mm-hmm. Is because it's like, oh, well, you know, I should have done that. And like, you know, I mean, that's a benefit of kind of you know, in your life, David, you know, like, you know, we took a trip out to Colorado and we met a bunch of beautiful wild children of God. But David kind of shows up and is very just comfortable. It's not our environment, right? Yeah, it's just not our environment. These are great people and I love them deeply, but it's not what we used to. You know, and so I'm not comfortable. You know what I mean? Like, I don't feel good here. But David just gets in and just sits in and goes, starts rapping with him. And it's like, it's all good. And I'm just like, you know. And when I had, because I stayed behind when and then David left. And I had a conversation with them about that. I said, you know, it's just something I love about David is like, he could just show up, you know. And what the guy, Charlie, said is, he's like, the thing about people like David and himself, Charlie, too, is like, when you've gone that far into the darkness, right? And you've gone that far into the deep end, the light is just all so much better. You know what
I'm saying? That's very true. It illuminates.
You know is you in Colorado. And, you know.
I have my friend of mine, right? He did 8 years in prison. Okay. No, I'm sorry. He did five years straight in prison. And when he got out, his girlfriend came to my wife and was like, man, he doesn't, like, he has no opinion on anything. It's like, if you ask him where he want to go, he'll go anywhere. He's really happy because he knows it's not, he's not locked up. You want to go to the city? Hell yeah. Where do you want to go? You want to go here or there? It doesn't matter, man. Whatever. I'm really... Let's do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like he doesn't have an opinion.
Well, fish or steak. Oh, man, that sounds great.
Yeah. That went on with him for a long time. Just like, it's so frustrating. Like, he'll do anything or do whatever. He has no opinion on anything because it's so much better.
Because everything's amazing.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm not in jail.
Yeah.
So then how does someone like me, you know, this is a question I ask myself. Mm-hmm. I've been wrestling with this real live shit we talk about, you know? Yeah. So then how does a person like me connect to that thing devoid of that deep pain? You know what I mean? And devoid of burning everything down now.
Honestly, I really feel like the first thing is, you know, taking away the comparison. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? Because even though your thing was your thing, and like if you were to tell the story of somebody that did 25 years in prison and was shanked 5 times and he made it out of there alive and now, you know, he's raising a family, okay? Like your story might not be that, but your story is a story. Like your story of pain, loss, having to go somewhere, being way up here at one time, you know what I mean, and doing these things and things changed and you had to deal with like the stress of, you know, really, you know, being there for you. Maybe not so much providing like economically, right? But being there for them.
I made way more money when I was getting high. I'm just going to tell you that. I've made far less money since getting sober.
But that's true, right? I know that's true. I know what you did, you know. You were like limelighted in a higher...
But I think even that I did as a form of punishment, right? As a form of like or fear of excess, right, in the form of punishment. But you look like you got something to say, Brian.
What
you got?
There's an interesting, like what David was sharing, and alcoholics and addicts do that all the time, is we differentiate our stories. Like you hear our story, and you will hear a lot of addicts and alcoholics say, well, I guess I'm just not an addict, or I'm just not an alcoholic, because, you know, so-and-so in their story, they were a drunk who, you know, went on a 7-day bender, and they, you know, they started in Nevada and woke up in Illinois and had no idea what happened. Well, it's like, well, I've never done that, so I'm not an alcoholic.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've shared my story on here before. Like, I'm qualified in the book. I'm very much a real alcoholic, but my brain will be like, but I never did that. So, you know, we'll do the same thing with addicts, you know. Like, for me, I was... opiates were a big thing for me, but I never used a needle, so I must not be an addict,
right.
You know, and so we'll do that, and there's like this weird sense of, like, as you were sharing what you were sharing, there's like a weird sense of almost an envy, you know, of like, because that person has, you know, the lower the bottom, the greater the freedom, the greater the surrendered experience. And it's almost like this weird envy of that person's experience.
Absolutely.
It's like it's denying my own experience, which is pretty
I got awesome. I got a sponsee right now. He's done 38 years in prison cumulatively through his life. And he's one of my favorite people to hang out with, you know. I had to cancel on him last night. But I love hanging out with him for that reason, because there is, you know, I just, his lust for life is...
heavy, high.
I want that.
Yeah,
but he was in prison for 38 years.
Do I got to go through that to get that, though?
Eating a sandwich, a homemade sandwich is probably...
Damn! We would have got milkshakes. Man, we was driving. He said, this is the best milkshake I ever had in my life. This is so good. I said, okay, yeah.
But then it goes back to what we were talking about earlier before, too, right? Is that, you know, we can't create a surrendered experience. It's like this idea that I've got this control over it. Like, I'm going to go out and make things worse so that I can experience better. And I do
that's a weird play.
It's a strange thing that something there still thinks that you've got control over the situation, but I cannot create a surrendered experience. Like, whatever, like, I have to experience it. And for me, that's like, if God, that's why I say, if I'm going to show the humility of, like, being able to say, like, if God wants me to experience more freedom and surrender, I'm sure that he can present me with a situation that's going to provide me with that experience of surrender. It doesn't have to be, I don't have to go do coke or shoot up or get drunk to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, I feel like that's the epicenter of this conversation is that, right? Is that you got to live through it, right?
Yeah.
And then it's okay to live through it. And it's okay to have these ups and downs and ebbs and flows about life, right?
Yeah.
You know? And like there's that adage, which is just don't use, right? But even that we're starting to see, right? Like, even if you do, just keep coming back, you know, like the door is open. Just come on. Okay. All right, cool. Come on. Let's keep going.
Yeah.
You know, and, that's a beautiful thing when somebody comes up to you and says, that's all right. Okay. Come on. Or someone who loves you despite, and I think that's what's in 12-step community. What's so beautiful is these relationships I have with these other men who know all that and still pick up the phone when I call, or who still might invite me to speak at their thing.
Yeah,
it's like, okay, but you know all the shit I did last week.
Right.
And you still want me on? Yeah. Yeah, I do. And when somebody mirrors that to you, boy, that'll give you a surrendered experience, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very powerful when you receive that from somebody, right? It's like, have you ever read the book Breathing Underwater by Richard Rohr?
Oh, man.
Yeah. We're about to go through it.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Light bulb went on over there.
See that?
That book's amazing. Yeah. And he talks a lot about, because you know what his background is, and he talks a lot about what 12-step fellowships have done that he wishes churches would do.
Yeah.
And it's that just pure, genuine, humble acceptance of just who you are, like genuinely just want you to be in here, and we know that we've got a solution for you. You come exactly as you are with all of your defects. You don't have to pretend like you're not a sinner here. You don't have to hide these, and we're not judging anybody. You messed up, keep coming, you know, come back. You messed up, come back. I got you. You know, and that helps to shift that internal perspective, you know, perception that we have that we were talking about earlier, is I think that a lot of what our struggles are is the perception, the internal perception. And I think when we were talking about self-love, right?
Yeah.
Is in that talk that I was talking about with the emotional sobriety, and what that guy was talking about was there's three things that really govern our life. We have it's perception, feeling, action. So I've got a perception. That perception leads to a feeling, and that feeling leads to an action that I take. Yeah. And if we're walking around thinking, man, I keep effing up, keep screwing up, I'm a failure, and we don't have a place that says, all good, we got you, then I'm going to stay in that perception of failure and that feeling of just absolute negativity and self-loathing. And if I'm staying in that feeling, then I'm going to
create more action that
create more action
feels
down that
like
way.
You have the perception.
So yeah. You talked about like what the steps do, right? And that's exactly what the steps do. The psychic change, right? The spiritual is the shift of the perception, right? Of I'm not that, right? Yeah. It's now it's gotten better. I can't say that I've fully accepted myself as a human being. I can't say I've gotten to that enlightened state yet. Now, nowhere close. But like that perception, internal perception starts to shift to where like my feelings start to really shift and my actions you start to see are a lot different.
And really, well, like what's more godly than that? Mm. Being in a place where that is the focus.
Oh,
you know
yeah.
what I'm saying? Right. What's more godly than that? There is, I'm telling you, man, like, I don't know. I've been to a lot of churches. I've sat in a lot of pews, and I've sat in a lot of rooms. And my spiritual wholeness, my relationship with God, my understanding of, like, how powerful my higher power is, what love is, what serving is, what does it mean to have a community, you know, a fellowship. Man, that's in the rooms, man. That is, I'm sorry. I mean, I'm telling you, through my own life's journey, I'm talking about me. Man, it is two really different experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And spiritually, and my connection with God, I've never had it more closer than sharing time and listening to people and being and receiving that love that you get from working the steps, being in that community, the hearing real people talk and the acceptance of you for who you are is where God is for me in those rooms.
Forever. You know what I love about this conversation is this is what the conversation would be if the mics and lights weren't on, right?
Yeah.
Like this is how we wrap. If we was talk. At dinner,
yeah.
we would
tough.
Start talking yeah, about yeah. this. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and then we might even be a little deeper with it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
like, we holding off because, you know, y'all listening.
Yeah. Because statute limitation ain't but, you know, which makes me think, like, because last week we did a Mystic Journey episode and we talked a lot about community and this we component, right? And that's such a key piece to this thing, right? Because I need this thing in order to learn how to better, more accurately evaluate myself, right? I have to have somebody who accepts me for who I am for me to have that example of, oh, maybe I can accept myself, you know? And then, or I have to, you know, find myself accepting someone for who they are. And I go, oh, wait, I just did that, right? And so that's the thing is like this spiritual growth and stuff. Sometimes we think that it happens in a vacuum.
Mm-mm.
And it doesn't. It happens in these conversations. Like I've like this conversation today, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, it gets people are listening to it because I think what if you're listening to this, you're going to hear yourself in one of us.
I hope so.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if you do, then it's going to give you a little sense of like, okay, you know, like you said, I can't force myself into a surrendered experience, right?
Yeah.
Like that is going to sit with me.
Yeah, really.
But it brings me so much peace because it just means, okay, we relax and take it easy.
Yes, yeah, right.
We cease fighting everyone and everything, even alcohol, right?
Wow.
Like it's right there,
yep.
You know, and how simple it is.
Yep.
Yeah.
And without the weed concept, if it's not a network, if it's not a community, if it's not a fellowship, if it's not a weed discussion, then it's impossible to edify the word of my God. It's impossible to have edification and build without a community of like-minded individuals, you know, trying to help each other out.
Yeah.
Trying to get understanding from each other.
Yeah.
So, parting thoughts as we wind this thing.
This is good, man. Bro, it's always good to see you, man.
Yeah, thanks. Likewise, man.
Thank you, dude. That was a great topic.
Come out here more often.
I love it.
Yeah. I love coming out here, hanging out with you guys.
Yeah. What do you got? Parting thoughts.
Parting thoughts, man. I think it's been something that's been heavy on my heart lately because it's been something about me my whole life is I've always struggled with this idea of, you know, setting this example or expectation of myself to be this thing and never being able to reach it because it's absurd and it's a lack of humility in who I actually am and always just going straight into this place of like beating myself up, right? And it's not useful and it's not productive and I think I'm in the place in my journey where the thing that I want the most in my life is the peace and the serenity and the love and, you know, and that kind of thing. And cause recently I've gone through, you know, some things where, you know, I eventually made the decision to go to therapy and that was,
good for you.
It was a new thing for me. And it was in a moment where like I'd call my sponsor every day and he was like, you know, dude, the 10 steps aren't touching this thing right now. You know, he said, when was the last time you sought counseling? I was like, I was in treatment. So I was like, all right, I'll go to therapy, you know, and their willingness. Right. And doing that.
That's awesome.
And yeah. And, you know, can I experience what I was experiencing, which was a lot of vulnerability and insecurity and still like, well, that makes me not a man, you know, like. That's ridiculous, you know?
But it also feels a lot better when you're paying someone to tell them that shit. Yeah, it's like, I'm paying you to tell you this, so I got some power.
Listen.
Here. Let me be completely vulnerable because I know I'm paying you and your mind for
listen
the next
to me.
47 minutes. So,
but then getting down to the bottom and understanding of like why, you know, what's showing up internally more, you know, and how can I continue to heal and grow as a man and as a human being and be more effective for other people? Because again, the more I have within me, the more I can give and be more effective to the world and be exactly what I think that God wants me to be and serve people.
Absolutely.
And so are you an external processor?
What do you mean?
Like, does it help you to talk things out?
I'm both. I mean, it definitely does. I feel like writing helps out a lot.
Uh-huh.
But I think I'm an overthinker, right? Yeah. It's what we call overthinkers. So what happens is I get caught in delusions very easily and I'll believe my delusions and I'll keep using the problem to try to fix the problem. So I have to use external, like I need somebody to provide me the Wii program, right? Yeah. That's why I need people the most.
And what do you feel like you're getting in therapy that you're not getting with the bro at the
it's more
park
time.
Bench?
It's more time, right? Like, I can't often call people and spend an hour to dive into exactly, you know, what it is that's showing. Like, why is my central nervous system reacting this way to this situation?
Yeah.
Right? It's like my sponsor actually is one of the most available people you'll find because he actually, for his job, he travels a lot. So he's on the road a lot. But he's still, like, nobody can be that available to dive, like, that deep into
stuff. And it's not just available physically or time-wise. But it's also available in that sacred space that person's holding.
Right.
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 So for that time they're sitting with you, there's nothing about them that's there. Right. They're there to hold the space and
exactly.
reflect back to you. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And help me to take a look at that. And we've talked about it before. You know, what I reveal can heal.
Yeah.
You know, and so it just gives me that space to be able to continue to reveal these things and take the deeper dive into it and to heal the central nervous system and do all that. So it's been something that's, you know, that's definitely on my mind is that being able to just accept who I am for what I am and be okay with that. And don't feel like I constantly have to prove myself all the time, you know, and kind of remove these attachments to these things of like validation that I have, like we were talking about earlier, like I have to be the best worker.
Yeah.
I have to be the best everywhere I go. And if I'm not, then I guess I'm not good enough. Right.
Yeah.
I want to continue to shift that because I want to continue to grow and I know in my experience like that helps me, like I said, but that also helps me become much more effective to other people, like way more effective, you know.
Yeah.
An alcoholic properly armed with facts about himself, like the book talks about, is much more able to help people. Now it talks about that specifically in our drinking, but I think it talks about that like in armed with facts
in,
about
in
myself.
Life.
Yeah, in life
you,
in general. Absolutely.
Who you are, like the more comfortable, the more knowledge you have. of who you are, the more help that you can help somebody else discover who they are.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. Yeah.
It's like when you're sitting with someone and they present a problem and you're like, well, this is how I jacked that up in my life. And they, and so you don't have to tell them what to do. You just tell them how you fucked it up.
Yeah. Let me tell you what I did.
Let me tell you how I messed it up. Yeah. And you can take for that what you want with it, but this is what I did. And I think it's such a beautiful way of reflection, you know, back. But I, too, you know, I've been, over the years, I've been in therapy in and out. And therapy provides this a different setting. It's a different thing, you know. And
I'm glad you say that because we never talked about that. But I've always had this feeling that, and I know you go to therapy and stuff like that. But I feel like I've always felt like there was something in you that was kind of saying, "Let me get through steps," like you know.
Right, and
that's not necessarily how I feel at all.
Yeah.
I think there's a serious place for not just because I am a counselor, but. It's a different vibe, man. Yeah. I'll say that much.
Man.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? But yeah. I think that, you know, like it has given me that extra space. I've used everything. You know what I mean?
You
like
have. I'm gonna tell you something, man. I respect that about you, man. You are one of my friends that really works every angle of like getting to be a better you. Like consistently. I love that. That's what I love about you.
Thank you. What I'm saying? And why not, right? Like, if yoga helps, why wouldn't I do that, you know? Yeah. But to me, any of it, like, because I'm a 12-step guy, too, right? And so and a lot of people think that 12-step guys are anti-therapy. That's nonsense.
No, but I do like what you said in the film, in Everything is Fine, right? Which is this is the bedrock.
Yes,
12-step's the bedrock.
Yeah.
Build up from that.
Yeah.
And I do think that is beneficial. And you got to have something as a framework.
I agree with that. I agree that is a great framework. That's where you build off of.
Yeah.
But to me, it's like the best aftercare. Because it's there forever.
Yes.
It's everywhere you need to. You know, it's free. It's always there. You're going to get so many different perspectives. And you like, you know, it's always available. Like, like almost every hour, it's always available. So, like, I get that. Like, that is the that's my foundation. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Was, like, being able to get to a meeting and try to really take it in, you know, understand it and get something out of it. But, like, the steps is always there. Yeah. The rooms are there. Forever, you know what I mean, and that's why I take a lot of like peace in that.
And more to that point is this is my foundation framework, but this is my way to live. Like the book called Manner of Living, Way to Live. This is literally like my blueprint. This is how I live, right? And so, like to me, I actually don't even separate therapy or yoga or whatever it is from the steps at all. Actually, you could even, to me, I think it's 11th step work. It's continuing to develop a conscious contact
daily.
And relationship with God. Like, how do I continue to develop that relationship, right? With my spirit, with the energy, with God.
And knowing yourself is a one way to continue that and improve on that conscious contact with God.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Being able to discern who's talking.
Quiet, still inner voice, man.
Well, this has been a fantastic conversation. I know I've gotten a lot out of it.
Me too, dude.
Yeah.
Every time I see you, bro, it's enriching.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, we say this, and we've been saying this for years, which is that you're worthy, and you're worthy of the work, right? And because we believe it, because we've seen it in our lives. And so that's why we say it to you. So you're worthy of taking that time. And I know that it's hard to take 30 days from your life and go work on yourself. And it's hard to justify that. But you're worth it. And you don't have to keep struggling and dying a death of 1,000 cuts. Mm. That you are worth taking the time for yourself.
Yeah.
If you don't know how to get there, hit us up. We know people. We'll get you there, but you are worth it, and take that time for yourself. Peace and love. This is the Most High Show.
Why Most High Media? Because I don't have the answers, other people do, and learning from the experiences, the stories, the perspectives, seeing people who have been through the darkest of circumstances and then have come out of it on the other side and have lived extremely exciting, fulfilling lives and tapped into a way of being and a way of living, but it's actually real and obtainable. That's why.